You really don't know, because you don't know what we're trying to do. You guys don't look at the films. You don't know what happened. You really don't know. You think you know, but you don't know, and you never will.
Greetings, Zach Klein from WSB Channel 2, along with Jeff Schultz from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. It is the We Never Played the Game podcast. It is the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament. My bracket's a mess. How many brackets did you fill out?
One, and I've got like 13 of my 16 teams.
Stop.
What?
No, you don't.
What?
That's just a bald-faced lie. You have.
I can't believe, after as long as I've known you, and okay. we've created this incredible product from the ground up.
We have.
That you're questioning me after all this time, and as much as you were opening your heart to me this morning.
Yes.
About trying to figure out how to pay for your daughter's bat mitzvah.
Yes. So you're telling
me questioning my.
You're telling me right now. You're telling the truth.
Hand me a blank bracket right now, and I will fill out my teams and show you. That
this is coming from a guy's, ladies and gentlemen, who moments ago said he stole from the Channel 2 WSB lunchroom because I didn't have my wallet with me. I'm borrowing some yogurt and a granola bar.
Okay. Once again, a broadcast media person is taking something out of
fake
context.
Fake news.
Can't think of something. Here's the story. First of all, we in our mobile studios for this incredible product, we happen to be in the WSB studios today.
Yes.
Now, I don't know how you and I can be under the same Cox Media umbrella, but if you guys are dumb enough, first of all, to go down to the second floor and have the equivalent of an honor bar.
It is an honor bar.
Okay, so I went
down there.
So you're
not honorable. So your bracket's shit.
No, let me.
Again, your yogurt is trash.
Again, Mr. Talk Radio guy, you're cutting me off. Okay, so I went down there. Money, good, real U.S. American currency.
Right.
Okay, with real presidents on there. I'm sorry, as we veer off into politics. Okay, I went down into the upgraded vending machine area. Honor system. And I grabbed a Chobani yogurt and a lemon Luna bar because I wasn't at a big prime rib and shrimp lunch like I think you were today, as usual. And I walked over to this area where you put money in the thing. You scan your items and you put money in, okay?
Yes.
Because these refrigerators just kind of open and close. And it added up and it was like $4 or some change or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I tried to put money in and it would not take the money. And I was looking on the screen and the options were account or credit or Red X. And it's like, where do you push for cash? Because I left my wallet upstairs in my bag.
So instead of coming up and walking 30 seconds to come get your wallet, with the items.
It would have taken way longer than 30 seconds. And I had show prep to do. Okay. So yes, you're damn right. I took my food and I ate my food. Now, maybe one day in the near future, I will eventually make good.
Okay.
But look, again, it gets back to basically it's your fault for having a system where I can take money without putting money in ahead of time.
Okay. So at the end, you realize there are cameras up there in the corner and there's not that many fuzzy.
Yeah, right, whatever. Okay.
Balding. Channel 2 employees.
Yeah, I've been sitting here for 45 minutes while you were doing your hair for this podcast, and nobody has come at me yet.
Yet. What's the biggest surprise of your bracket? Is it the Loyola
Besides
Chicago?
The fact that you doubt me that I have 13 of 16 teams?
Yes. I doubt that you had Florida State, Gonzaga, A&M, Syracuse. You didn't have Syracuse in your Sweet 16. They weren't even supposed to be in the tournament. You didn't have them. You didn't have Kansas State over UVA. You didn't have Loyola Chicago. There's 14 that his name right there. So how could you have 13 of the 16?
You know, again, I'm tired of defending myself. Yeah, nine of the top 16 teams or top four seeds in each of the four regions, nine of the 16 are out. I mean, that's crazy.
I saw a great tweet. This was from Joe Rexrode. I'm not sure who Joe Rexrode he is. He's a sports columnist for the Tennessean, so I'm going to give him credit. He put this out here earlier today, Jeff. He said, out of the tournament, SEC co-champs, Auburn, Tennessee. ACC champ, Virginia. Pac-12 champ, Zona. Big Ten champ, Michigan State. Big East champ, Xavier. AAC champ, Cincinnati. The only Power League champ to make the second weekend. is my Kansas Jayhawks. That tells you a little bit about the craziness we saw these first two games, first two dates, in the NCAA tournament.
It's nuts. I mean, the South is the first region in NCAA tournament history to not have one of the top four seeds make it to the tournament. I've never seen anything like it. We got, two number ones are out, two number twos are out, two number threes are out, and three number fours are out.
Unreal. So do you like the Atlanta region? Obviously Kentucky, they're going to be a lot of blue in Atlanta this week. But you look at the other, you have a 9-seed Kansas State, 11-seed Loyola Chicago, and a 7-seed Nevada. So John Calipari, who was bitching about his seeding and where he had to go and all these other teams in his bracket,
right,
all he has to do is get through either a 9, 11, or 7, and he's going to the Final Four.
This is like one of the worst Kentucky teams in history. I mean, post-probation teams notwithstanding. It's crazy. I mean, they can basically nap through their two games here to get into the sweet.
So
to
do
get
you like
the
story of all these underdogs and the 98-year-old sister nun who's coming in from Loyola Chicago, or would you rather have the Cincinnati's coming in, Tennessee as a 3-seed?
I would like 3 or 4 of those stories. Yeah. I don't want 15 out of 16 of those stories.
Yeah.
But you know what? And I'm not going to say I necessarily saw this coming, but it's not the biggest shock in the world from the standpoint that college, and I'll write about this later in the week, college basketball has sort of been trending toward mm-hmm. this for a while. Because of parity, because of lack of dominant teams, because of so many kids transferring from one school or to the other, because they care more about playing time than they do a conference championship or playing for a major quote unquote Power Five team. And we've certainly seen this over the last several years. I mean, there's a lot of really good coaches in the mid-major level because they can make pretty good money now. They don't have to go to a major conference to make money. It's a whole different economic model in basketball than it is in football. So, we've sort of been trending toward this for a while, but we've never had it to this extreme before.
Would you want to reseed the top 16?
I wouldn't necessarily. Well, I mean, I guess now you could say there's sort of an argument for that. Although you look at the East and they got 1, 2, 3, and 5 in. So, yeah. I mean, the East is fine. I wouldn't mind just changing the whole model, maybe. I mean, why even have regions?
Right.
Maybe just go that way. Just seed 1 through 64, maybe. But I think no matter how you quote unquote seed them, people are going to be wrong. Because it's a complete guessing game, as I think this year sort of illustrates. Mm-hmm. Who's to say 6 is better than 7?
Right.
I mean, we've seen this. We've seen how many 13s beat 4s, or 4s are out. So mm-hmm. I think the question is, do you just change the whole model altogether?
I don't think we need that. I mean, let's just it is what it is, right? It crowns a champion. It doesn't necessarily crown the best team in college basketball because it's a one and done situation. And as an alum of KU, I mean, how many times did I see a Roy Williams have a number one ranked team that had maybe lost 2 or 3 games the entire season and then go 3 of 20 from 3-point land? You face a hot shooting team,
right,
a Belmont, for example, and then you're gone. I mean, we saw that happened yesterday to North Carolina, and they suffered the worst loss in the Roy Williams tournament era. They lost 86-65 to Texas A&M, and Texas A&M is a very good team. They're athletic, they're big, but in that game against the Aggies, North Carolina went 6 of 31 from 3-point land, while Texas A&M went 10 of 24.
And that's really one of the great equalizers is any of these programs, small programs, can get a couple of great 3-point shooters who happen to get hot that day.
Amen.
And
you're moving on.
And you're moving on. Because again, like you just said, it's one and done. And we should say that, by the time we get to the Final Four, we could still have
right,
Kentucky, Michigan, Villanova, and Kansas or Duke. I mean, so it's going to be the same blue bloods and whatever.
It could be.
But again, we just haven't seen anything to this extreme in the first two rounds of the tournament.
I was driving back from Nashville. We'll get to Georgia State and what Ron Hunter was able to do with the Panthers. Opened up my iPad and I watched the second half of the Virginia-UMBC game. Honestly, you had to Google what UMBC stood for, didn't you?
I did. I, 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 I had to Google.
Yes. As did I.
Honestly, I wasn't even sure that they were in the 48 contiguous states. I was wondering maybe it was
from
Alaska.
Or,
no, Alaska, Hawaii. I wasn't sure. I thought it might be out there. That might be a body of water between. Or,
so yeah. I'm leading this up because you and I had never heard of them. We both had to Google who they were.
Right.
They're playing the number one overall seed in the tournament. A Virginia team that had two losses the entire year. A Virginia team that won the ACC regular season. A Virginia team that won the ACC postseason. They were a 20-point favorite. They gave up 53 points a game against a team that you and I had to Google. And the only reason this team we had to Google got into the NCAA tournament, it was that they banked in a shot in their conference tournament to qualify automatically for the postseason. I thought, and again, it's so fresh in my mind, but I thought it was the greatest upset I've ever seen in sports. You look at me like I'm crazy, and I want to know why.
I'm always going to go U.S. hockey team over Russia. I mean, I don't know. I think it's in the argument. Although to be honest with you, I might still put Shaman out over Virginia in college basketball. This is years ago. You might not have been born yet. But
Googling,
you're gonna Google. Yeah. Chaminade beat Virginia, the Ralph Sampson team. It was a preseason tournament in Hawaii.
Talk about the stage that we're on.
Yeah, I understand that. Okay, so
according to Wikipedia, December 23rd, 1982, at the Honolulu International Center.
Yes,
they defeated the Cavs, the top ranked team, 77-72. And then on UVA's team was the three-time National Player of the Year in Ralph Sampson.
Here's why I would put that game over the game we just saw. Not that this upset wasn't monumental, is that team, I think, was at least expected to be more dominant than this Virginia team. This Virginia team was very good. Don't get me wrong.
They lost two games, Jeffrey.
I understand that. But I and many other people were saying during the year, this is a really good team, but it's a beatable team. They're heavy on defense. They play really well. They play really smart. Yes, they could go all the way and win the championship, but it wasn't a dominant team. I mean, they didn't go back and look. Okay, they
56 days ago, they lost to Albany by 44 points.
I get that. I'm talking about from the favorite perspective right now. Okay. I didn't view them as necessarily unbeatable. Now, did I view them as beatable by UMBC, CBM? I still don't know right. The order that the four. I'm pretty sure U comes first, right? Yeah, is U come first?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm down to 999 possibilities. U, whatever.
UMBC. University of Missouri.
You don't know. See, Maryland. You're going to Missouri.
Maryland, Baltimore County. I apologize.
Okay.
Yes.
Or backup county, as I think somebody, somebody said. So, yeah, I mean, let's say it's certainly the biggest upset in NCAA tournament history. I don't know if it's the biggest upset in college basketball history. I suppose it's in the argument. But, I mean, I'm always going to put U.S. over Russia hockey, or U.S. Soviet Union, excuse me, hockey is number one Olympic. That to me isn't even close.
Some people they threw out Buster Douglas. They threw out.
I think Buster Douglas is. I mean, that could be number two.
They threw out NC State beating Phi Sillamma Jamma in the 83 championship game.
And Buster Douglas is a good example because we didn't quite foresee the unraveling of Mike Tyson to that degree yet. At that point, is it all to me when you're talking about the greatest upset of all time? It starts with, excuse me, how great was that team that lost?
Yeah.
Or that entity that lost?
Your Chaminade team was 10-1, by the way.
Okay, they beat other teams from Kauai.
I don't know. App State over Michigan in football is a good one.
That's a good one, yeah.
I hear what you're saying. And again, it's so fresh on my mind. But when you lose to Albany by 44 and then beat the number one overall seed in the tournament by 20,
I mean, the fact that they beat him by so much, obviously.
They just
huge.
Killed him. That was great.
Yeah.
Back to Georgia State. First time. Have you been spent much time in Nashville, by the way?
Yeah, I like Nashville.
It was my first time there. Awesome city.
Really?
Yeah. Really, really cool.
You never went to a Georgia Vanderbilt
game?
No, we covered it
for Channel 2, but I personally never went. Or Chuck Dottle would go for us. Went down for a Titans-Falcons game. Just great people, that Broadway area. I'm a big music guy, so just having the windows open up, and instead of having a mannequin right there, you'd have a drum kit, and everybody's playing music, and then the next door, there's a different band, and then there's a different band. The food, the scenery, the visuals on the water. It was just, I was really impressed with Nashville.
The great thing about Nashville is everybody is in the music business. Mm. No, I mean, everybody. I mean, so like if you go to a hotel, and your waitress comes and asks you if you want to order off the menu or have the breakfast buffet. Mm-hmm. Oh, how long you work here? Oh, I don't really work here. I'm actually a country singer.
Nice.
Everybody is so.
It's like LA, you know, everybody waitressing want to be movies or something.
Yeah,
like
I mean the industry. In the industry, yes.
Very cool time.
No, I like Nashville.
It was good. It was great.
I joke about it a little bit. I like it.
The Hunter, Ron Hunter was really cool. Had some quality time with him. I brought him Wendy's burgers. So we had a.
I saw that you cheaped out and got him a single.
Yeah, like his kind. If this was Cincinnati, he said, "Coach, I'd be getting a double cheeseburger." You just got me a single, so that was fun. I was
maybe
very,
he can coach in Cincinnati. They'll be looking for a coach after they lost.
Tough. I mean, it'd be a tough column this day. I find pretty easy column this day to work for the Cincinnati Inquirer with both Xavier and Cincinnati going down.
Columnists love mayhem. Are you kidding me?
That is mayhem. Yeah, both those teams getting bounced on the opening weekend. But DeMarcus Simons, got to spend some time with him. The freshman of the year a year ago in the Sun Belt Conference, Jeff, and then the player of the year this past year, scores the first 16 points of the game. It was 16-0 DeMarcus, or 16 DeMarcus Simons, 9 points for Cincinnati, 1 point. You talk about the transfer rule. I mean, the Georgia State returns four players from a team that won it all, their conference, and I think the future is really bright. Here's what Coach Hunter and DeMarcus Simons had to say after their opening round exit, where they lost to Cincinnati despite being a one-possession game with about 9 minutes to go in the game.
We wanted to show early that we belong. That's all we talked about. You know, let's show that we belong. And then once you decide that you belong out here, then you got to go try to win the game. And so I thought our kids, they, you know, in the timeout, I love that they were coaching themselves for the most part in the timeout, that they wanted to go, they wanted this fight. And so, again, we just at the end, we just didn't have enough bodies to kind of get through it at the end.
In the second half, you guys had that one-point lead. I see you slapping the floor, getting everybody fired up. You felt like you had this one down the stretch, didn't you?
Yeah, but, you know, the rebounding was just too much at the end. They were really physical, and we just ran out of gas. I was just proud of my team, you know what I mean? Nobody gave up. Nobody quit. We just kept playing hard, and, you know, that's all we can really ask for at the end of the day.
That was DeMarcus Simons. They're all everything, a guard forward. And he mentioned getting out rebounded, Jeff. Cincinnati had a plus 20 advantage on the glass that led to a 24-7 advantage in second chance points.
Yeah, I think you and I were either talking on the phone or texting ahead of time before the game. And I basically said, I think to you, and I think most people, this was a really bad matchup for Georgia State.
It was.
You know, all that stuff about, you know, if you have one or two great 3-point shooters, you can upset a team, which is great. But Cincinnati, notwithstanding the fact that they blew a 22-point lead in the last 10 minutes of the game, they're a really good team and really big and strong and physical. And this, you know, Georgia State would have had a shot to win a game if it was played a different kind of team, I think. But hats off to Ron Hunter. We've talked about him before. We need to get him on a podcast because he'd be a lot of fun. I mean, 5 years at Georgia State, or at least 5 years since they moved to the Sun Belt. And, I mean, 20-plus wins 4 out of 5 years. 2 NCAA tournament bids in the last 4 years. He's really done a good job. And I know a lot of people, you know, say, well, boy, Georgia should look at him, or Georgia Tech should have looked at him before. I just think he's really good at the level he's at right now. And I don't say that as a criticism at all. I just think let him make his mark at Georgia State. And he's in position to, because it's a well-supported program, and he can recruit. He can get some kids from Atlanta that aren't going to quote-unquote big schools, and he could build up something here much like other mid-major programs. I think they're in a really good position.
He is happy.
Oh, he should be.
He loves living in the city. He loves everything that represents Atlanta. He gets the kids he wants. The pressure is – you know, winning the Sun Belt. And you talked to a couple of the guys on their staff, and they were more nervous, more weight on their shoulders for that Sun Belt tournament than there was for the NCAA.
Oh, absolutely, because that gets you in.
That gets you in. Yeah. So I think, yes, he is content. He's joking about, you know, signing an extension, getting more cash, and, you know, and pay him. He's great for the university. He represents that brand and that jersey really, really well. And he has fun along the way. He gets his guys to graduate. He's recruiting some of the best around him. DeMarcus Simons, I mean, this kid is legit. I mean, he was so explosive, very polished. I was blown away by him. And credit to Coach Hunter and his staff on what they were able to do in Atlanta. And again, with four returning starters, a transfer coming in, a redshirt freshman who I believe came in from Pittsburgh, Jeff, they're going to be another 25-win team. And they talked about improving on that seed. And next year, if they're a 11, 12, maybe even a 10 seed, I would not want to play them, especially with Simons running the show for Georgia State. As for Georgia, Tom Crean, also known as Tom Crean, introduced.
I was going to say, did that hire Tom too?
Introduced in Athens, and you were there for his 20. Did you time it, by the way?
I did. I looked down at my watch after about 8-10 minutes. I looked down at my watch because I knew he walked in. They walked into the room. I was going to say it was like 3:04 or something like that, and he got on stage at like 3:06. And after about 8-10 minutes, I went over, looking at my watch, and thought, oh, 8-10 minutes. He's probably wrapping up. And then he kind of kept going and going. The funniest thing was, and it ended up at 27 minutes. The funniest thing was
a 27-minute opening statement.
Correct. No,
not a 27-minute press conference.
He hadn't taken any.
And just for the record, right now I'm looking at our clock. We are at 21 minutes for this podcast. His opening statement is got another 6 more minutes than this entire podcast right now.
This was about the second or third time that that he would have been saying, okay, and my last thing I want to say before I turn it over, except he kind of kept going and going and going.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know it's on everybody's mind in the room. Everybody's like, and we're all entertained. Don't get me wrong. I'm not mad. Nobody's mad. I'm kind of smiling about it. I'm looking around. I think some other people are kind of smiling about it. So, you know, I raise my hand to ask a question. They go in order. And I think I was the fourth person call on to ask a question. You know me. I'm not going to let it go. And I mean, I got to put it out there. So I asked two questions, one of which was tongue-in-cheek and the other which was serious. And I said, Tom, Jeff Schultz, the AJC, first of all, I think I timed your opening statement. It was 27 minutes. And he's like, was it that long? And I said, yeah. I said, I just want to know, is that going to be like a normal? And he goes, that's not, he said something like, that's not good for deadline, right? What would be good? I said, I don't know, like 2-2.5 minutes, you know, for an opening statement. Okay. And should I, now normally I go talk to the team and I do radio. Should I come in here after that? Isn't that? And he's like playing along. Yeah. We're kind of like having fun with it, you know? And later on, my real question was about, you know, what he learned in his year off and going around. But it was kind of funny because I think everybody in the room know. He came up to me afterwards. So he goes, really? I didn't know it was 27. I said, it's cool. It was like, kind of funny. But the funny thing is everybody in the room kind of knew it was, you know, we were joking around about it. And I wrote about it a lot. You know, just it was an amazing thing to see because I'll say this, Zach, for his 27 minutes from when he started to it ended, his emotion did not wane. Mm-hmm. He was jacked up the entire time and fist pounding on the podium once in a while and finger pointing.
He was getting emotional, right? Talking about his family, totally, too.
Everything, yeah. That was not, I kind of joked he didn't take a breath. He did stop. I'd say it was about 6 minutes into it when he talked about his family, kind of got choked up and took a sip of water or whatever. But of course, there's always one or two complete
trolls on Twitter that got to
you. I wouldn't say they got to me. It's like, are you serious with this? Saying, you know,
how
saying,
dare you question his opening statement length?
Yeah, trying to embarrass the man on a proud day. It's like, are you serious?
Just, you can't make fun of yourself.
Okay, you know what? Let me just say this. If you are the dumbass one of the dumbasses who tweeted me, just turn off the podcast.
Right.
Because we want smart people on this podcast. Yes. Okay. We want no dumbasses unless you are offering to bring a sponsorship. Right. Because then we will take money from it, and we are for sale.
Yes, okay. We're looking for somebody.
But otherwise, we don't want you. But no, back to Tom Crean. I love the man. I think he's going to do. I mean, I don't want to prejudge coach. I don't prejudge coaches.
Okay.
But I think he's really good for Georgia.
What does it tell you about him that he accepted this job without stepping foot on campus?
The last time he had stepped foot on campus, I think he said was like he had once 1990. I think he came here and they said he lost by like 54 points or something.
So basically nothing changed between then and second McCollum's team now.
It looks exactly the same. I think it says, because I'm sure there were other potential job opportunities up there. There were talk about, I mean, he was, you know, Pitt was looking at him. I think he was a candidate at UConn. And the truth is he was still making money off a buyout too. So he could have stuck around and done nothing for a year and he was already working for ESPN. I think it says that he sees what I think a lot of people see at Georgia like I do, which is like, look, this is a major university. It's a well-funded athletic administration. It's arguably the greatest college town in the country. It's a beautiful place to live. Athens, Georgia is great. And this is a sort of a potential gold mine or diamond in the rough. This has the potential to do something if, and this is the big if, Zach, if the administration is committed to it. They certainly suggested they were committed to it by giving him a 6-year contract.
Yeah, what, 19 million close to it?
Yeah, for over $3 million a year. So, I mean, it's that is something. And I would imagine when you're in a guy in Tom Crean's situation, it wasn't just about the money for him, although that's a big part of it, but it was going to be about what else are you bringing to the table. And after the press conference, or after the formal part of the press conferences, one of the first things I did was I went to Greg McGarrity, the athletic director, and I said, you know, when you talked to him, what was brought up? And he said, and I'll just kind of paraphrase here, he basically said Crean really came to the interview prepared. He already knew a lot about the program. He knew a lot about the university, the background. He had some issues that he wanted to address and concerns. And in so many words, he was saying support. I mean, are you guys going to be with us as we want to do A, B, C, D, E? And McGarrity said yes. And so we'll see now what happens.
Did anybody ask him about kind of the Fox, Mark Fox undertone?
Lack of partnership?
Yes.
I would imagine... I would imagine that was sort of between the lines of what I just addressed.
Okay.
Because
the
Mark,
support.
Yeah. Cause Mark Fox, look, I know Fox pretty well. I really don't think he was putting that out there as an excuse for having bad years the last 2 years.
Agreed.
Or this is why we didn't make the tournament.
Not having a point guard is not on Greg McGarrity.
No. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, Greg is not the one who failed to recruit enough 3-point shooters.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I do think there was something to Fox putting out there saying, I didn't really ever fully feel like there was a partnership here, that we were all in this together. And I do think there can be some sort of ripple effect. And we've talked about this before. McGarrity is not the one who hired Mark Fox. Damon Evans did. And so anytime you have a situation where a new boss comes in, you sort of have to impress the new guy a little bit. So I do think that to some degree, in context, at least, Crean was did ask that. And I think, you know, the answer was acceptable. It was a 6-hour interview. Now, I don't know during that 6 hours how often Greg McGarrity was able to get a question in, because Tom Crean might have been talking. No, so I'm just joking.
Here is the new Georgia head coach about accepting the job at the University of Georgia.
I learned an awful lot in a short period of time. And the good news for me in all of these situations is I've always paid attention to Georgia. You can't be in this business of college sports, college basketball, and not have a really good view of what it's all about at this school. I've been an admirer from afar, especially when you look at what's happened with the different sports teams, because when you're in a sports family like I am, you're paying a lot more attention than just to basketball. So it is without question an honor to stand here. It's an honor to bring our family to this family.
Only 13 schools, Jeff, this year won a bowl game and advanced to the NCAA tournament. Georgia State, by the way, was one of those schools. You say you'll never prejudge a head coach.
Right.
How much time will you give a new head coach to turn things around and get to what Greg McGarrity expects, an elite level, back to the NCAA tournament?
That will be an easier question to answer, Zach, after recruiting and after we see what players stay, what players go. A lot of times players will want to transfer because they weren't recruited by that coach. They think their playing time is going to go down. Certain guys sometimes are run off, I mean, so to speak. So that's a hard, very difficult question to answer today. But I will say this. I think this sort of answers that question. He was given a six-year contract. I think that's not that unusual in college sports anymore, because you obviously have to do at least 4 to give the guy a quote-unquote recruiting class. And sometimes it takes a year or two. I mean, look, Pitt just basically said all of its players can go. You're right. Free to go. So who, you know, did they name it? They didn't name a coach yet, did they? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So whoever gets that job is like, we got nothing. You and I could go try out right now if we don't worry about a scholarship. So I think if guys from this year who have eligibility left are coming back next year, I think they could be decent next year, because I think the guys coming back, there's sort of a understanding that they will have bought in. And usually when there's a new coach, there's a, okay, we believe, and you get a bump. Now, that wasn't the case with Kirby Smart. I'll say that. I mean, the guys that came back, some of them came back, but they fought it. And I think that's why Georgia football had problems in Kirby Smart's first year. By that second year, everybody had bought in. Some of those other guys from the first year were gone. And so, yeah, it's a hard question to answer right now. I think 2 or 3 years at least to get to the point that, as we think of getting to where they should be.
If non-traditional hoop schools like a Tennessee, a South Carolina, I mean, I was shocked to learn that Texas A&M, Jeff, for the second time in 3 years, is going to the Sweet 16. forget making the tournament. The Aggies are going to the Sweet 16 for the second time in 3 years. Georgia has no excuse not to be in that conversation. I'm not talking Sweet 16. I'm talking about getting in the tournament every single year.
That is not an excuse anymore.
It's
just not. I mean, South Carolina went to the Final Four. South Carolina? Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to go to the Final Four every year.
Yes.
But it is not an excuse anymore as long as, again, the commitment is there from the administration in terms of support staff and recruiting budgets and all that other stuff that goes beyond the head coach's salary.
We're 3 weeks away from the Masters. I want to wrap things up with Tiger Woods.
He already won, I think.
he's now the favorite, man.
It's crazy.
8-1. Now, I know Vegas sets their odds.
If he loses, it'll be the greatest upset in the history of sports.
Back-to-back Sundays, we see the man in red making a charge on the back nine.
Yeah,
he was within one shot of the lead. We talked about this a little bit on a previous pod. Are you buying? Not necessarily him has the favorite, but to be in 3 weeks in contention on the back nine in Augusta.
I am because this wasn't a one-time thing where he, you know, in the past during this turn, these attended comebacks from obviously his personal issues, but not mostly from back injuries and getting old. We saw Tiger shoot one great round or just an incredible hole. And the next hole he would hit into the trees or the next hole he'd three putted or something like that. And this is as good, solid, consistent play as he's done in a long, long time, consecutive tournaments now, against, you know, good golfers, and through Sunday. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. I think he absolutely can contend in Masters. I don't know that it necessarily would make him the favorite, but I think he could be on the leaderboard all 4 days.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't get here soon enough. Fun. What's your over-under on egg salad sandwiches, by the way?
Oh, what do you mean in terms of?
Like, what, if you were set the over-under at like 10.
Oh, you mean for the week?
Yeah.
For me? For me, it's like 3. I'm not going to over.
That's day one.
Does Passover overlap?
We'll have a whole podcast dedicated just to the food of Augusta. Thanks for checking it out, everybody.
They do have good
egg salad. On the We Never Played the Game podcast for Jeff Schultz of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I'm Zach Klein from WSB Channel 2 in Atlanta. We appreciate the love, and we'll see you next time on the We Never Played the Game pod.
See ya.